Hello, and welcome to Why Wars Happened, a weekly history podcast where we talk about what led to war in history. I'm your host, Emily Ross, and today we're going to be discussing the things that led to the American Revolution, with a focus on Virginia this season. Okay, so where we left off in the last episode was that Parliament had executed the King of England. They had taken over control of the colony, and Virginia nearly came to war with England over its refusal to accept Parliament as its ruler without a king. Representatives of Parliament were able to persuade Virginia to stand down. Virginia accepted Parliament's authority without a king, and Governor Berkeley stepped down from his position as governor. All right, so Parliament has made it clear that they're in charge of Virginia, and the colonists were free to trade with whatever countries they want. All is well. Well, not really. Remember that the governor controlled half of the assembly. That half was called the governor's council. He chose who was on that council, and he also chose all police, all judges, and many other types of government officials. So now that the governor was gone, they had to figure out whether things like the police, the judges, and other officials the governor had chosen would remain in their positions, or if new ones would be chosen. On top of that, the men sent from England had been given the authority to hold new elections for the elected side of the assembly. Everyone who had taken the oath of loyalty to Parliament could vote. Within a few months, the new representatives were ready to gather. Their first order of business was to put together a constitution for the colony. Because Parliament ruled over the colony, they still needed its approval for most things. And because of this, when they went about writing the colony's constitution, they were very careful not to put things in it that Parliament would later reject. The new constitution included things like the representatives now having power to elect the governor of the colony. Before this, it was always the king who chose the governor. And before that, it was the Virginia Company who chose the governor. This was a major deal. The representatives were also given the power to elect members of the governor's council. This was another major deal, because before this, only the governor could choose people for the governor's council. No longer would a governor control half of the assembly. Now, the people would elect representatives, and those representatives would elect the other half of the government. In this way, the people now had a voice in all of their government. Because the people they voted for also elected the governor, and because the people they voted for also elected the governor, they even had a choice in who their governor would be. Up to this point, the governor's council side of the assembly had wielded control over the elected side. Now it was the other way around. The representatives had control over who was governor and who was in the council. They were even given the power to remove the governor if they didn't like the way he governed them. The only power that could stop the elected representatives was either being voted out or Parliament stepping in to tell them no. The men who were sent to get the colonists to submit had achieved their goal. Beyond these things, they didn't really have many instructions on how Parliament wanted things to be set up. In addition to that, England was still at the end of a civil war and was still in a mass of confusion over how things would work without a king. Being that Parliament had its hands full, they didn't pay much attention to the colony and basically left them alone to do things as they pleased. In order to get things set up in Virginia, everyone agreed that once the representatives chose a governor, the new governor, with the men sent over from England, would choose the police, the judges, and other officials. After that, it would be left to the representatives. The representatives unanimously voted for a man named Richard Bennett to be their governor. This all seemed to be working well. The representatives had elected a new governor, and everyone was working together. Unfortunately for the colonists, the representatives didn't specify exactly what powers the governor didn't have. They just said that he had all the powers the representatives gave to him from time to time. This would end up causing a lot of problems between the representatives and the governor. They were, however, clear on one thing. They would not allow their power to be taken by the governor in any way. One story goes that the night before the representatives were to elect a Speaker of the House, Governor Bennett advised them not to choose this one guy named Lieutenant Chiles. This guy had been kicked out of Virginia's military because of some illegal trading with Holland that he was involved in. His name was one that people didn't want to be associated with. However, just to show the governor that he had no power or place to even make a suggestion to the representatives, they elected that Lieutenant Chiles guy as Speaker of the House. While everyone was getting the new government set up, a problem had been developing in the eastern part of Virginia. This was on a small peninsula that looks like it should belong to Maryland. In 1650, right after the king was executed and Oliver Cromwell took over the head of government, Parliament declared that a new law was to be in place, the Navigation Act, which said that English colonists couldn't buy or sell from anyone other than England in English ships. They had declared that people in Virginia, Barbados, Bermuda, and Antigua were rebels and had taken the power of government into their own hands and were therefore traitors. The people in this heavily Dutch peninsula of Virginia were outraged. This angered everyone in Virginia. Everybody was trading with the Dutch. But it was especially angering to the people on that peninsula in Virginia because they were mostly Dutch in that area. They had family, long ties, and friends with well-established trade routes that they used with other Dutchmen. It would be like the Dutch prohibiting English settlers from trading with English ships. It was an outrage for sure. Not to mention that items from the Dutch cost less than items from the English, and the Dutch also paid more money for things that the colonists sold. So now, that shirt you bought for $10, well, you have to get it from the English, and it's $15 now. That tobacco you sold for $300, you have to sell it to the English, and they'll take it off your hands for $100. Around this time, the Dutch War had broken out. New York was, at the time, owned by the Dutch, and it was called New Amsterdam. At first, it seems the Dutch were planning on attacking the English colonies around New Amsterdam. But they decided against it and instead sent orders to the governor of New Amsterdam telling him to ally with the natives in the area just in case of an emergency. As fate would have it, the ship carrying those orders was captured and so were the documents ordering the allying with the natives. These documents were twisted in a way and caused wild rumors to spread through the English colonies that the Dutch were planning on allying with the natives to rise against the English colonists. This caused special fears about the Virginia Peninsula, where a large number of the settlers there were Dutch. The governor of New Amsterdam even wrote to the governor of Virginia declaring his friendly feelings and his desire to remain in good relations despite the war going on between England and the Dutch. But the rumors were too fiery and fierce to die down. The rumors were so terrifying to the people of Virginia that the Virginian government made it illegal for the Dutch in the area to do any trade whatsoever with the natives, and anyone caught trading with the natives would be fined 500 pounds of tobacco. Then, several native chiefs told the English colonists that the governor of New Amsterdam had asked them to commit another massacre against the English colonists. Fire was once again set to the rumors of the Dutch conspiring to slaughter the English, and representatives of Virginia met in Boston to discuss the situation. Soon, the people in Virginia and Maryland were absolutely convinced that yet another massacre was coming and that this time the natives would have the help of the Dutch. Remember that not long before this, the people of Virginia had endured at least two major massacres committed against them by the natives who had attempted to wipe them out completely. They hacked up babies, mothers, elderly, and men all the same. The memory and pain from this was still very much alive among the people. The rumors were based in absolute experience and truth of events that had already happened to them numerous times. And it wasn't long after this that the Dutch in the peninsula feared for their own safety from the English, who were becoming more terrified of the Dutch by the day. The son of a prominent military leader in the colony testified under oath that his father, the military leader, could prove the Dutch plot against the English settlers was true. He probably had some evidence, but not enough to prove anything. He also stated that his father believed the English had to attack the Dutch citizens before they attacked the English. It was a matter of self-defense. The testimony of this man, who again was the son of a Virginia military leader, convinced the Dutch in the area that at least part of the Virginia military was headed by a homicidal maniac who would delight in their deaths. Eventually, the Virginia government had to step in and issue orders for the punishment of anyone harassing the Dutch citizens in the area. This may have helped the Dutch feel a tiny, small bit safer, but what's certain is that the English were outraged. Here were the Dutch citizens, for sure allying with the natives to kill us all, and the government's going to punish us for protecting ourselves before the Dutch can harm us? There was also something else going on. The Dutch in that area were afraid of the English citizens of Virginia, but They also had a general feeling of separateness from the rest of Virginia, and it took hold of the citizens on the peninsula. They were paying heavy taxes to the government without so much as one representative in the colony's government. They weren't represented like the rest of the colony was. The rest of the colony also wasn't faced with the same dangers as they were. This feeling of separateness from the other parts of Virginia grew over time, and that homicidal maniac leading part of the Virginia military stoked the fires by encouraging people in the area to resist Virginia's government. He said that Virginia didn't care for the peninsula, and that it only used the peninsula to pay for the rest of the colony's expenses, while the peninsula gained nothing from Virginia in return. This sense of independence from Virginia was further encouraged by royalists. Remember that at this moment in history, it was when the King of England had just been executed and the Parliament had taken over control with Oliver Cromwell at the lead. Virginia had at first resisted the idea of Parliament controlling them, and in a previous episode, we covered the drama that went down and almost ended in a battle, colonial rifles pointed at British soldiers as they sailed down the James River. Now, just a few weeks after Virginia had accepted Parliament's authority in England, those still loyal to the throne spoke to the people on the peninsula about the good old days when the king ruled and they weren't taken advantage of in the way they are now with Virginia and Parliament working together. They said that things were better under the king, and the people of the peninsula shouldn't consent to be part of the Virginia/Parliament government. They could do better on their own. Every day for about a week, people gathered in the ports and listened to rebels spread talk of resisting and independence from Virginia. At the end of the week, they elected a handful of people to write a letter of protest to the Virginia government. The protest letter complained that they had been paying crazy taxes that were very high for years, and that they did this while being under the impression that for several years now, they were no longer really a part of Virginia. They pointed out that they hadn't even sent a representative to the assembly since the year they broke off from Virginia. So really, they broke off years ago, and these taxes are bonkers and quite illegal. You'd think that they would demand to be recognized as separate from Virginia, but they didn't do that. Instead, they asked to be allowed to elect representatives to the assembly. Then an actual protest happened. This one's really important, but it's hardly talked about. It was the first protest in the American colonies against Britain over the issue of taxation without representation. This was by the people in the Virginia Peninsula in 1652. There had been grievances about this before, but never a protest. In times before this, Virginia colonists had asserted this right granted to them from the very first day they set foot in Virginia. The king had guaranteed that they had all the rights of every Englishman as though they were on English soil itself. One of those rights already recognized in England was the right to representation in the group that makes laws, including tax laws. The people of the peninsula weren't arguing for this right to be given to them. They were arguing that they already had this right and that it had been illegally denied to them. This may seem like it was a protest against Virginia and not England, but in fact, since Virginia had submitted to Parliament only 3 weeks before this, the people who were controlling Virginia were representatives of Parliament. They hadn't been elected by the people. They had instead been chosen by Parliament in England and sent to Virginia. They were still busy setting Virginia up with the new elections. So even though the taxes and the lack of representation was caused by Virginia, this protest in this moment was directed at the Parliament of England, who at that moment ruled over Virginia while the protest happened. The ill feelings continued into the next year, and when a crowd of people gathered around to voice their discontent, one of the men shouted out that the judges on the peninsula were nothing more than a bunch of villains and asses, to which the crowd yelled their agreement. The government on the peninsula was unable to control the protest, so Governor Bennett led a small group of men to the peninsula to try and restore order. In the end, trials were held, people were punished, and a civil war was prevented. After this, Oliver Cromwell, who ruled England, was busy with ongoing battles and political issues at home and basically left Virginia to govern itself. There had been a few things here and there, like the Navigation Acts that Parliament had imposed on Virginia, but other than that, Virginia was left alone, almost like its own independent country. During this time, Virginia gained valuable experience in self-government and got a taste of what it would be like to be free from England. That's all for today. Thanks for tuning in. Join us next week when we discuss how the power in the assembly was challenged and how the assembly made it clear that they were in charge and that the people who elected them had a voice that couldn't be silenced by any governor. Subscribe so you don't miss the next episode and comment your thoughts on this episode below. See you next time on Why Wars Happened.